So this episode is about tensions and a very special version of tension, because I got a question for Kim. So I'm a guy that usually works in startup settings that then tend to scale. And what's interesting about a startup setting is that it's super chaotic. You're doing all the things at once and you're learning a whole lot by sort of, it's trial by fire. And once we find some sort of product market fit, and once we start bringing additional people online, what happens is that we mature, which is great. That creates safety. But to a certain extent, I have this feeling in my gut that one of the things that stability robs us of is those opportunities for learning that we had in the initial chaotic period. But we tend to remove those because we flee from the pain of them. We go, we don't like the panic, we don't like that, let's have less of that. But in that, we also have less learning. What's your take on that?
That's interesting, because I've worked in a very large organization for a long period of time, so it was quite stable. And I'm also now, for the last 4 years or so, in a small consultancy, which is undergoing growth, so that's a contrast. And a lot of the consulting that I'm doing is with large, mostly federal government organizations, which again are quite stable in certain ways. So I really enjoyed the change coming out of that large, stable organization, because I get to do lots of different things. And when I was in that large, stable organization, I really had to push myself to get variety in my day. I could have just sat at my desk all day and just done my job, but I didn't really enjoy doing that, and I didn't grow and learn from it. I needed to push myself to get into different situations, and that was quite uncomfortable. I remember the first time I went overseas to a conference, and I was really not quite sure that I should go. It's like, I'm going to be out of the office for a week or two, and I might miss out on something. And it was really, thank you, Stephen, for pushing me out the door almost to go. I very much appreciate it, because if you hadn't have pushed me that little bit, I don't know where I'd be today. So, yes, it was very uncomfortable. It was very unsettling, and it was the best thing I could have done at the time, I think. So, yes, you do very easily get into that rut of comfort, and it is very hard to get out of it, and you don't grow from it. I would absolutely agree that that's what happens. So I don't know that I've answered the question, though.
Yeah, we'll both seem to at least go, well, this dynamic definitely exists. And does what I wonder is, how do we even gainfully manage this? Because to a certain extent, if I look at myself, the experiences that to a certain degree has shaped who I am and how I do things, and sort of that has forced me to very quickly learn and adopt, are these sort of small crises, and then sometimes fairly substantial crises, where security wasn't one of the things you had, stability wasn't one of the things I had. I just had to figure it out on my own with scarce resources. That was sort of do or die, or sort of I either figure it out or we perish. And of course, that's super stressful to a certain extent, but it's also areas that defines my growth. And then we go in and manage organizations and teams. And as you say, if we make them too stable, they become comfortable, but it then forces sort of, it puts the onus on the people comfortably in the system we built to find ways to grow. And it's one common complaint between, it's sort of in almost any organization I've worked with, and in sort of when I talk to people outside my own organization, is that sort of what people want is growth. What people also want is safety. And I think that to some extent, we get in our own way because we don't think in the right way around this. I don't know what the right way is, though. I'm just sort of, because we go, we do something and it hurt, and then our reaction is, let's remove the pain. But when we remove the pain, we also make it so that it becomes more predictable. That's good. But it also becomes more boring to a certain degree unless we add some other component. How do we manage that tension? How do we sort of create systems, and how do we create a mindset in ourselves that actually the goal isn't to remove all pain. What we should do is remove unnecessary pain and friction, and also we should be strategic about where we do these things. Sort of we should strategically push ourselves as individuals and teams and organizations. We should sort of, the startup ends up sort of, yes, everything is burning. So everything is sort of, we're not actually strategic about the learning. How do we get to that point where we're strategically inflicting pain on ourselves in order to grow? Sounds horrible. There must be a better frame, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can be strategic about it. I think if I think about some of the hardest parts of the job I've ever done, and one of those was in that stable organization. It was a large transformation project, and it's one of the reasons the word transformation is a bit scary for me. And while I was in it and working in it, it was horrible, it was tricky, it was hard, there were lots of not very good things about it. But the things I learnt from going through that, when I look back on it, I'm so grateful that I did it. So I think if I was to be, go back in time and say, Kim, you should strategically, for the good of your career and your development, you should do this 5-year transformation thing that's, it's going to be tough. And you really should do it. I think if I knew ahead of time that that's what I would get out of it, I would have shied away from it, from the pain of it. And I wouldn't have done it. I would have chosen to stay where I was and not move into that role. But I didn't know that it was going to be painful, and I had high hopes. And so I went off and did it. And yes, it was painful. And in hindsight, it was also really good. I think the sort of person I am, if I was to try and be strategic about putting myself into learning opportunities, I think I would just naturally shy away from them.
I think that's interesting, because it's also one of these common things in entrepreneurship circles. And in many cases, you can sort of go, no sensible person would ever attempt to start something new, because the failure rate is just like 90% of everything just fails outright. So we have this sort of inbound, you need to be naive about how hard it's going to be, otherwise you won't actually get started. And sort of a bit like a bumblebee, if you don't know that you can't fly, then surprisingly often you actually can. There's something to that. Would it be useful to carry this frame into retrospecting about things? Sort of going, okay, yes, that was a stressful and horrible situation to be in, but I got something out of it. Sort of knowing that sort of when it happens, or sort of post hoc, we could actually change our perception of it. Would that be useful? Because that's also something I'm thinking about, because it also relates to another part of my life, my running. But what would you say about that?
I would agree with that. I'm pretty much an optimist, and I also hate the idea of waste. So to think that I spent my time doing something that I didn't learn anything from or didn't get any value from is pretty awful for me to think about. So I will always try and find, what did I learn from it? What benefit did I get? What was the good of it in anything that I think about? Because otherwise it's just that idea of having wasted time or having wasted an opportunity is just something that would be so terrible.
So I think that's interesting, because it makes me think, sort of, what is, what's the definition of waste here? Because I can see sort of, you have, did it create value for the organization, or did everything go okay? And we know that most things won't actually go okay or go very well, but you can still learn something from it. But that also requires a bit of a shift in frame, right? You can fail your transformation, and thus it could be wasteful for the organization. You can still have a lot of personal growth from it, right?
Exactly, yes. What is the good that we got out of it? Absolutely. It's the what is the good. It might have just been personal growth. Yeah, that particular one was quite good. There are a lot of good things that came out of it. It was very tough for a lot of people, but I'm grateful that I got the opportunity to work there. And I don't know that my career would have benefited from doing anything else for those 5 years that I had options to do. So yeah, from when I look back at things like that, I do look at the bright side of it, and I do look for what was the good in it.
I think that's interesting. I just recently, in that other context of my running, was talking about those challenges. And one thing that I can relate in with regards to my running and those experiences is, and the thing that I said was, one reason for me to sort of take on these challenges and sort of run these races that I don't know if I'll finish or sort of what will happen is to get to that point where I'm exploring something new. And how I framed that in a particular conversation was that it's by overcoming we become. Essentially, growth comes from going to that edge, and that's unpleasant, and then realizing that you can take one more step, or you sort of you can actually handle this. And I think that just listening to your transformation story, I think I've had similar instances professionally where you're at the same point. Sort of you're in a situation that you're not actually certain you can handle, or it has sort of pushed your capabilities or your knowledge to a point where you're not even sure anymore. But then you sort of, you find your way through it, and that becomes your new strength, essentially. I think that defines my career, essentially. Get put into a situation that I have no idea of how to handle, manage to dig myself out of it, and that sort of becomes a large part of my professional identity. I think, I have two metaphors for this, I think. The first one being that of, we often talk about organizations and sort of our view of things that we should shift towards a more organic mindset, more of sort of a cultivating things, and sort of we're always planting seeds. And what I think is interesting about sort of if we take that particular track is if what we're doing is planting seeds and what we want are sort of healthy plants to a certain extent, then it makes a whole lot of sense to early on shelter the early sprouts and sort of give them a lot of care and attention and protect them from the elements. But at some point, in order to get something really healthy out of it, we need to expose them to the outside environment. We need to take the shields away in order to also make it strong and healthy and sort of grow. So there, I think that there's something to that. And I think that ties into our tendencies. So my other sort of take on this is if we look to exercise and training, if we look at it from doing it for performance, there's many other reasons to do it, but if we look at the performer's perspective, usually the main mistake we do is that we make it too comfortable and too consistent in terms of we're doing the same thing over and over again. What we should strive to do is push the modalities in opposite directions. So we should do, if you want to enhance your performance, what you should do is you should make your hard bits harder, and you should make your easy bits more relaxing. So and because it's the switch between modalities that actually forces adoption, and that sort of you need both recovery and overreaching, and you need to balance these two in order to not burn out or in order to not stagnate. And I think that what I see happening both personally and sort of in a lot of teams that I've worked with over the years is that we find our favorite modality, our favorite way of doing things, and then we do that. And it becomes increasingly stressful, as you said, sort of we become increasingly neurotic when it comes to switching modalities, how we do the work. If we're always working in a certain way, then when we need to switch tracks, sort of either sort of do deliveries more frequently or sort of we get an incident or what have you, then that becomes really stressful. It becomes as stressful as the people that are always living incident to incident when we try to get them and help them to get to a point where they have some predictability in their life and some stability, because it removes sort of, we're actually, it's not about if the other mode is superior or not. We can always debate that. But the switch in itself causes anxiety. And I think we should be more deliberate about picking and sort of challenging ourselves by switching modalities, switching working modes, sort of switching something about how we do the things in order to achieve growth. It's the same thing as sort of, yes, we need to have that initial growth of the sprout, but the sprout also needs to sort of change its environment in order to fully develop. If we look at these different movements around strength training and conditioning, you have sort of these more functional bits and sort of, as you say, go move far back and sort of people didn't weight train. They simply did work, be that sort of in the forest or on a farm or sort of we had a functional life, which made us strong. And then as we improve our conditions, we need to sort of add these bits in again. And then you get sort of various forms of structured exercise. I think humans are built to move. We're not built to exercise to a certain extent, but we need to add that in because that element has been taken from our environment for some really good reasons, but sort of we need to add it in. And the same thing I think happens with, I see a deep parallel into my early Agile days, where sort of one of the things I realized that when we go Agile or when we go Lean, there's things that all of a sudden, sort of the big waterfall-ish PhaseGate projects, they had a lot of things wrong in them, but the wrongness also gave rise to sort of periods of rest and sort of you're on the bench because you're waiting for your next project to sort of roll on. And that's where you did knowledge development, stuff like that. So you had all of these aspects that happened that we thought were bad things. And then when we sort of become more lean, we actually need to consciously add these bits in again. And that's what's happening in, I think, to a certain degree with gym analogy. As we specialize the machines, that helps, it makes it approachable to more people. It becomes safe. It helps you isolate muscles. And to a certain extent, that could help you lift heavier weights. But you lose some of the functionality and it becomes increasingly complex to consciously add in all the bits that you would have gotten by simply doing natural work. And I think that's where sort of partly the popularity of CrossFit or MoveNat comes from, is that you're sort of going towards a simulated but more natural functional form in a sense. And that makes it, to a certain extent, it makes it less isolated. It makes it easier to actually manage to get a complete whole out of it. And it makes it easier to find all of these small challenges that sort of got lost when you shopped it out and specialized it too heavily by building fancy machines for it. So I think there's a lot in that. Larry Wald, the creator of Perl, I don't remember the other virtues of a great programmer, but the one I do remember is a great programmer is lazy. And he uses exactly this formulation of it and that framing of it, that actually you're ready to do a whole lot of work and sort of a whole lot of thinking in order to avoid doing work, in a sense. And it's a whole lot about that work smarter, not harder, sort of that if you're forcing your way through it, then you're probably doing it wrong. And there should be some sense of elegance and you don't spare the effort in order to make that. I think that that's an interesting tension in itself.
And that these statements remind me of that statement about maximizing the amount of work not done. So in other words, making sure you're not doing things that you didn't have to do. There's actually a lot of effort that you need to do in order to get to that point. Carrying one great big load is a lot more effort than a lot of little loads. But that's, again, maximizing the amount of work not done. So this is back to tension. The tension is between the amount of thought you put into the work and the amount of effort. So in other words, if you put a good amount of thought into how you're going to get the work done, you can minimize the amount of effort you need to expend.
So just a question and one thing that it got me thinking. So we have maximized the amount of work not done, and we have do the simplest thing that could possibly work. And I'm sort of imagining this bricklaying situation. If I'm using the simplest solution that could possibly work, and me being me, slightly clumsy, not that strong, I would simply go, well, I'll just take a brick and I'll move it to where it needs to be, and then I'll go fetch the next brick. Why go through all the hassle of figuring out how to balance additional bricks? Because if I do, the only thing that would happen is that, in my mind, is that, heck, I would get... It's more complicated. It's a new process. I need to learn how to balance additional bricks and might actually require a bit of fiddling to get the balance right. And also, I'll be exhausting myself quicker because I'm not spreading the effort out. So what's the forcing function and what's the thing that actually makes you go towards that isn't the simplest thing?
Mm.
Essentially, an appreciation for the systemic effect of choosing a too simplistic solution, then. That's sort of it's the simplest thing that could possibly work, but in this case, actually, that isn't the simplest thing because it doesn't actually respect the time and context of the work being done. Sort of that's a modulating factor on it. And this is what makes expertise look like magic. So I'm thinking about this really old idea in programming circles where also you have, we tried to explain the distinction between sort of why, what's different between juniors and experts and sort of what's, and I think one of the interesting aspects is exactly this, that there's no amount of additional people without the knowledge that will figure that solution out. Sort of if you're a craftsman at that level, that you know that this sort of, you've seen it, you've done it, you've perfected this particular move, then someone that hasn't have that, got that knowledge, doesn't matter how many of them you get into the building, they won't make do that thing. So there's a infliction of sort of, it's only not that the more senior people or seniority makes you stronger. You sort of, it's not that you have a bigger shovel. You might have in many instances, you can do the same things faster, but it's also that you can hit different notes. You can do things that aren't really accessible before you reach a certain point or before you've been taught certain skills and sort of have certain mental models of this is actually a thing you can do. And I think that was, to just tie back to my early Agile experiences, one of the main chief things that Agile gave me was the idea that things doesn't need to be this way. They can be drastically better. There's a hope of someone sort of gave me that idea, and that was something to work towards and something to achieve. And I think that sort of you're touching all of these aspects. I think that what is sort of fairly established is that we're actually really bad as humans at large at gauging what will make us happy. And to a certain extent, we strive for stability. And once we get it, we sort of get bored and sad, and we really don't know where it's coming from. But a lot of people get depressed about all the stability that they were asking for. When they get it, there's something lacking in it. And that does also leads us to another thing, that sort of another tension in my mind. And that's the, when is it helpful to remove the pain? And when is it actually counterproductive, because it robs you of the opportunity and the pride in workmanship that comes from actually overcoming and gaining that confidence, as you say.